Are you obsessed with death? Does hearing the word death make you squirm or spark anxiety? In this special crossover episode, we team up with Rob, host of the Obsessed with Death podcast, to tackle the ultimate taboo and explore how we can normalize the conversation surrounding death.
Let's get comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Hello, Rob.
Hi.
Hi. Rob, do you mind introducing yourself to our listener so they get a hint of who you are?
Yeah, I would love to. My name's Rob, and I host a podcast called Obsessed with Death, and I have a mildly unhealthy obsession with death. I think about it entirely way too much. I make my friends and my family uncomfortable with questions and conversations that are death related, probably more than you're supposed to. And so I started a podcast so that I could talk to other people who I assumed would be more comfortable talking about death, and to give myself an outlet to talk about death in what I guess is technically the appropriate environment to discuss it, a podcast about death. So I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Rob made us all best friends by reaching out and then invited, basically proposed we're going to do a, what do you call this? We're new to this. What do you?
It's a crossover episode. So I had both of you on my podcast. And I basically forced you both to be my friend and have me on your podcast. So here we are.
Yeah. And it worked out because here we are. It all worked out.
Yeah.
You also, by making a podcast about death, it's the most normal way you can go about it. Like, once it's a podcast, we're like, oh, that's cool. You're doing like this cool thing.
Yeah, it's better than like trying to talk to strangers in the parking lot or something about, you know, when they think they're going to die, or, you know, when the last time they went to a funeral was. People aren't usually into that.
There definitely would be like a documentary that would come out, or I'd find like a TikTok video, like, there's this guy in a parking lot that's asking about death. Like, watch out for this guy. He's in a white van.
I don't know why I have to be the creepy guy in the van, but.
You were in a parking lot.
Maybe I need to start a TikTok series where I just run up to strangers and ask them, you know, how they feel about dying.
But really honest answers that way.
I have no motivation to ever do anything like that. Have you ever been in public? I'm just taking over your podcast now. Have you ever been in public? Like, when you watch TikToks, there's like people that like go up to strangers at like the grocery store.
Yeah.
Has that ever actually happened to either of you, where like somebody's like, can I make a TikTok with you?
For me, no, but I feel like the old school version was just like a camera in your face for like random documentaries type of thing, which was like before iPhones.
Oh, okay.
That has happened. I'm sure there's like a documentary where they asked me like a weird history fact. And of course, like once the camera's in your face, like you don't know anything. I don't know my name. I don't know what day it is. I don't know anything. Sure. So I kind of try to get out of that as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's happened to me, but not any of the like actual TikToks now. But there's probably my face in like a random documentary somewhere.
I had like 5 20-year-old young men ask if they could sing for me in the middle of an aisle at Target like 6 months ago. I said sure. Lovely. Why, you know, that would be fine, but then they were like, oh, but you have to pay us. And I was like, I'm not gonna pay young boys money in a Target grocery store aisle for anything, so I'm gonna leave.
Your accountant.
Yeah, but it was very strange. Anyway,
a unique experience.
The internet's weird. That's why I brought that up, because that's why I don't want to be that person who goes in a parking lot. Yeah. You could cut all of this. It doesn't matter. I'm just rambling. I'm sorry.
This is turning into a whole other episode.
This is like a whole different podcast now.
This is how to get arrested.
Yeah. This is how to end up on a watch list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bonus episode.
Tips and tricks.
Yeah.
Well, to circle back to the original next question was, what exactly made you obsessed with death? You told us why, like, you're so obsessed with it, XYZ, what you do with it. But, like, what inspired this? I've never heard someone say that openly.
Mental illness, I think. I don't know. I remember exactly where I was the moment I realized I was going to die one day. And I could still, like, picture the entire, you know, moment it happened. And I've never really been able to, like, escape it after that. Like, it's just something that has sort of consumed me ever since the moment I realized that I'm going to die and everybody else is also going to die. And it just sort of just gradually became more of an obsession. I mean, I don't know. Obsession might not be the best word. It was just a good title. You know, it kind of fit for a podcast. I don't know if I'm necessarily obsessed with death, but it does come across my mind probably more than most people. I think about it probably more than most people. And I'm oddly comfortable talking about it more than most people. And I have no idea why. I think it's just because it's this really scary thing and I have anxiety and death is terrifying. So it's one of the many things I think about probably too much. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just like, it's always been not even in the back of my mind, just like right in the middle of my mind. I think about it multiple times every day, whether it's like I get a weird pain in my chest and I'm like, this is it, I'm going to die, or this is like uncomfortable to talk about or maybe embarrassing to admit. But there was a period where I was probably going to the emergency room an uncomfortable amount for an adult. Like anything, any weird thing, I was like, I'm dying, and I would just go to the hospital. I never was like on a first name basis with like a doctor or anything, but I was even realizing like, this is too much. You're going to the emergency room way too often, and you gotta stop assuming you're gonna die all the time. So it was bad for a while, but shout out therapy. Been going to therapy since 2020, and that has helped a ton. And so is the podcast. The podcast helps tremendously. But yeah, I don't know if I could pinpoint exactly what it is, besides the fact that dying is terrifying. And for whatever reason, the way my brain works, I hyper-focus on the fact that this is all gonna end, and I don't want it to. And for whatever reason, I think if I constantly think and talk about it, it won't happen. So
I don't think like this is unusual. I think there's a lot of people out there that have the same, I don't want to say fear, but have the same anxiety around death, and that it's just such an uncertainty for everybody. But I think there's a lot of people that don't want to admit that they're scared of it. But like, that's probably a consistent thought. I mean, I think about it a lot. I know my own family thinks about it a lot and also has fears about their health. And I want to touch a little bit on the thoughts that crossed your mind when you first realized like you're going to die. Because I learned that as a young child. I think my grandma had passed. And that was the first time my parents had a conversation with me about like, you leave and you're never coming back. And I wish I could capture what I must have thought at the time, but I don't have that. I wish I could like recollect on what that thought was.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved my parents to have sat me down and been like, you're going to die. I probably would have maybe not have been this obsessed with it or thought about it that much if somebody would have at some point said, because it was just all me in my own head realizing it and then thinking about it. I mean, I went to a funeral when I was very young, like maybe not 8 or 9 years old. I went to an open casket funeral for my great grandmother. And you know, looking back, I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know I was at a funeral. I didn't know she was dead. I was just like in a room full of people. And there's this lady I met like, you know, 6 months ago. And now she's, I don't know, napping in front of everybody. Like I had no idea.
And was that how it was told to you? Like, oh, she's just sleeping.
I mean, to be fair, I don't really remember. And I'm sure if I asked my parents, they wouldn't remember how they handled it either.
Right.
But I mean, it was much later in life until I realized I was going to die. Like I didn't have that, the epiphany of you're going to die one day after an open casket funeral. It took so many years later. So I think that having somebody sit you down at a young age and, you know, tell you that you're going to die one day is probably a good thing. It's just, I don't know, the way you approach it is important, I would assume.
Yeah, I think all the time is I'm not a parent. Yeah. How do you even start that conversation with your kid? Like, I'm going to die someday. You're going to die someday. If you ever have kids, they're going to die someday. Like, that's such a heavy reality to put on a kid. But I think I was like maybe 5 or 6 when that happened for me. And like, I for a while, I think was like, what do you mean? I don't live forever. Are you kidding?
Well, and then I don't know, you know, how deep you guys get into it on the podcast, but I think a lot of people use religion as a way to maybe ease the pain a little bit. They're like, yeah. Oh, well, you're going to die one day, but then you'll just go to this magical place where grandma and grandpa and Scooter, the dog, and everyone is going to be hanging out again. So like, it really doesn't matter. Yeah, you're going to die, but then it's just going to be like the same thing again, just somewhere else. So, and look, if that's what you believe, I'm jealous. I wish I had that comfort.
Yeah, I agree. I'm jealous of people who can have that hope and faith in something.
Yeah.
But same thing, when you watch people die or you're around people who are dying, it is very hard to hold on to that hope and faith when you're watching people suffer or when terrible accidents happen. Rachel and I talk a lot, like our experiences around death and loss involve like medical issues and healthcare and sudden decline of from being healthy to being ill. Whereas like I can't, and Rachel and I talk about this quite a bit on, we haven't lost people in like car accidents or we haven't lost children. And these are very different experiences around death and loss. And, you know, like knock on wood, we hope we don't experience this again, but it's a reality for so many people in that the way people lose people or the person in your life that's lost, like that adds so much context to the death itself.
Yeah. I mean, I interviewed this guy on my podcast, Colin Campbell, and he wrote a book called Finding the Words. And it's about how him and his wife were driving with their 2 children and they were hit by a drunk driver and both of his kids died. Okay. And it was just, now it's just him and his wife trying to live the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, he wrote this incredible book. I mean, it's kind of hard to read at times. And mm-hmm. then even interviewing him, I mean, we're doing a podcast about the book that he wrote about his dead children. And I was still like almost uncomfortable just to talk to him about it. It's so difficult. And of course he was, you know, he made it so easy and he's this incredible person. Like having a conversation with him is like life changing. I don't know how you keep going after that. But to like meet somebody who like could find a way to handle that is incredible. But yeah, I mean, there are people that obviously, I mean, there was, I saw something online not that long ago where this guy was being interviewed and he's like, oh yeah, I got a phone call and they told me that my wife and my son and my brother, they all died in a car accident at the same time. Okay. And it was like, how do you even, how do you keep functioning after that?
Yeah. So,
I don't know.
I don't either.
And disappear going
yeah. I mean, you have to be a strong person, I think, and have strong people around you. But
absolutely,
yeah. Death is something that you should probably tell your children as soon as they you know, they're able to comprehend it. But just like do it in a fun way, like take them to the park and find a dead animal and Just kidding. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's like the start of like serial killer type. You're going to find your kid with a bunch of like dead animals. Like you said, this is about death. Like Rob just started a way for like kids to learn to be serial killers from a young age.
Yeah. Look, do you want your kid to be normal or not? Pick one.
You want to do the next Dexter.
And I think this like goes easily into like the next thing that Rachel and I wanted to talk about is trying to normalize the conversation around grief and death. And obviously you have a whole podcast dedicated to talking about death. And we wanted to know, like, why do you think it is important to be talking about death more, either culturally or in a societal sense? And how comfortable are people feeling about talking about death?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very, very important. I was speaking to somebody today, just a few hours ago, who is a hospice nurse, and all she would talk about was basically having to meet with these families of the people that are, you know, dealing with this person in hospice, And it was like she would have these conversations with them, and it was like it's like none of them ever thought or were talked to about death before. And really? it was clearly so difficult for them. So yeah, I don't know. I think obviously it's an uncomfortable thing. Nobody wants to die. It's scary. It's like the whole unknown of it. But I think, I don't know, people, it's so easy. It's like this thing that we put people in hospitals and they're like, so you keep all of the death stuff in a building far away from everybody, right? Like, I don't know. I think that anything scary, nobody wants to talk about, or you're gonna push it off until you have to, until somebody dies, and then you have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm in this odd situation where, for whatever reason, my brain puts it in a way that I want to talk about it, and I don't know what that is. Maybe if more people were as awkward and uncomfortable as me and forceful in death conversations, death wouldn't be so scary. And I think that's the main thing, right? Is like, I don't want to be scared of this thing. And I think, I don't know if you've ever had a panic attack before, but like when you have a panic attack, for whatever reason, one of the best ways to stop a panic attack is to acknowledge it and be like, all right, I'm having a panic attack. Yeah. And that's what's happening. And I'm going to be okay. I've had them before. I was okay. I'm going to be okay now. So it's like, for whatever reason, that helps. Or just telling somebody that you're having a panic attack, just talking about it helps. Talking helps. So I think people don't want to talk about it because it is so uncomfortable and scary, but I think we'd all be so much better off. I mentioned this to the both of you on my podcast. It was like, I've had some friends die recently in the past couple of years. And, you know, for whatever reason, I felt way more prepared and way more comfortable with the entire situation because I've been having these conversations for so long.
Yeah.
We also talked a little bit in your podcast, like, people are so comfortable talking about true crime, and they'll talk about death if it's like salacious and juicy and, you know, everything, even though it's someone's real life, like they'll talk about it. Yeah. But as soon as it's like personal and it's like, oh, I've lost somebody or you lost somebody, all of a sudden it gets really awkward, which I feel like it's like an interesting thing. Like you can talk about it, but not when there's actual like your feelings involved and anything personal. It's like has to be very impersonal and people feel comfortable talking about death, which I think is the hard part. It's like, you need it. It's so personal when you lose somebody. You need people to be able to talk to you about it. You need to be able to express like how sad it is, how hard it is, all the things. People don't want to talk to them about it. People don't want to reach out about it because they feel awkward. But it's like you hear some news, juicy news story, like everyone will talk to you about that. And that's just a weird, I don't know. It's a weird thing in society.
Yeah, it is odd how comfortable people are about talking about like mass murder. But like when their grandma dies, they have to like quit their job. They're in bed for like 2 weeks, and it's this hard thing. Obviously, they're much closer to their grandma than they are to the stranger who got murdered on television. But yeah, I think this fascination with true crime is probably not helping people be as prepared as they should be for like loss in their own life. It just seems like this like pretend thing on television. And everyone's going to live till they're 90 and nothing bad's ever going to happen to you. And it's unfortunate, but people sort of have to, I guess, learn the hard way that life is a cruel bitch.
I think media is also kind of making people desensitized. Like even with that CEO that got shot, like I get healthcare is like absolute shit and like there needs so much to be improved. But my first thought wasn't like, happy, you know, and a lot of the comments I was personally shocked, like all the comments were basically like for him being killed, which to me I was just
it was the party emoji just nonstop everywhere you look.
And like people don't know him, people don't know if he has family, if he has kids, like they don't know anything. I don't know, I've never looked him up to like know what his
he had a wife and kids. Yeah,
I just can't imagine as like the wife or the kids seeing your dad's death, one, all over the news. Like you can see the video of him actually getting shot. And then two, people are celebrating it and no one has empathy for that because like his wife and kids are just his family, you know, that are experiencing a crazy loss, a shocking loss, and no one has empathy for it. And I get why you know, there's so much corruption and all these things, but maybe because I've lost people, I would just never, that would never be my first thought is like, oh, cool. Like, I'm glad someone did that. And it, I don't know if people, like, if that's the real feelings or just, like, the desensitization, like, desensitize people. I'm not sure. But it, to me, it was alarming. And I feel like that's not a great turn for society.
Yeah.
But I don't know. To me, that was just, like, a weird thing. Because I was like, if that happened to me, that would just make it so much harder. And losing somebody already is just so fucking hard. Yeah. And then that, I just can't even imagine. That whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to judge humanity on like Twitter because I don't feel like oh. it's the best gauge. I think if you took a person and you asked them, you know, their reaction to a handful of things and then they gave you their response and then you looked at their Twitter feed, some of them would probably be different. And being able to hide behind the internet makes it a little bit easier to like celebrate someone's death. But yeah, for sure. I think humanity is going in an odd direction when most of the people on the internet are like high-fiving each other because some dude got killed. I think they're, you know, the internet's terrifying. So
it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the conflation between someone's public death on the streets versus like real people's issues with the healthcare system. I mean, I think everyone agrees they've had horrible experiences somewhere with their own insurance. But those are, I feel like, two separate incidences that we've now combined into one, like, very public defining event for 2024. Like, it is very, very interesting. And it's kind of like this weird pop culture moment because the kid was just quite in a, interesting person within himself, and and it's also just like, I mean, like, everyone's like, this is gonna be a Ryan Murphy movie, and it's just like, because like more details keep coming out, but yeah, there's just true crime morbidity about it where we're all just like, it's like a train wreck, you can't stop watching.
I mean, I think part of it too is a lot of people can relate to losing somebody because of a denial from health insurance, right? So it's like they lost somebody.
Yeah.
And now this guy who could potentially have been responsible for them losing somebody is now losing his life for, one in the same. So there is this like weird celebratory act to it with certain people, I guess. But still, it's like, I don't know, somebody kills your mom in a car accident and I guarantee you, you're going to feel way better if you forgive that person than if you just hold a grudge the rest of your life. And if you're going to sit there and celebrate somebody getting shot in the street, you know, there's probably some other things going on in your life that are probably not so great either. I can't imagine you're going to find someone who's healthy and happy and has a rich and successful life who's also on Twitter going, God, I can't wait for them to shoot somebody else tomorrow. Like, you know, I don't know. It's a certain type of person. It is unfortunate, but, you know, we live in a weird time for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to quote the great Taylor Swift, though, when she said,
please,
you don't have to forgive them. You can forget them without forgiving them and move on. Because if someone had killed my mom in a car accident, I would probably go hunt them down. I'm not forgiving you. I'm sorry. That's not who I am. I can't. My mom's already gone. So now if someone hurts me, I just always think like, I'm going to send my dad, my mom, and my sister ghosts to haunt the shit out of you. Like, that makes me feel better. And I want that energy. So like, if someone attacked my mom in a car, I'd probably go punch him in the face. Actually, I have a really good elbow. Because I do Muay Thai sometimes, and I feel like my elbow is really great, and I haven't used it in a real life situation. But that's where I would want to use it. Like,
she's waiting. Sure.
Yeah,
I guess it depends on the situation. If it was an accident, if they accidentally killed your mom in a car crash, are we still giving them the elbow to the face? Even if it was an accidental thing,
I would give three elbows. If it was a guy, I'd also do a knee. Like a few knees.
Got it. Yeah. What if you accidentally killed somebody in a car accident? You would expect the same? You would want to get an elbow to the face?
I would accept it.
Okay.
If I did that, if I killed someone, I mean, if I did that, I would feel like absolute shit to begin with.
So
I
don't even know how getting an elbow to the face would probably make it just that much worse because you already feel bad.
Yeah. I'd be like, whatever, like I did that. Like, I don't even know how that would handle that. But back to the topic at hand, we were just curious of like, what is the most interesting story or fact you've learned about death from doing, I think you said you've been doing your podcast for 5 years now, right? What has stuck with you, either positive or dark, negative?
Oh, man. That is a good question. But I would say probably one of my favorite episodes and something that really stuck with me. There is this neuroscientist. Her name is Mary Frances O'Connor. And she studies people's brains while they're grieving. And I just think grief is just such an interesting thing because it's just constant. It never goes away. You're never going to just stop grieving over losing somebody. And the fact that she decided that she wanted to spend her life, studying the brain and studying people that are grieving. I just think it's an incredible way to focus your time. One of the things I remember bringing up to her was like, how do you just like go out and enjoy a Friday night after you just spent the whole day with people that are just starting to grieve? I mean, all she's doing is just talking to people who have just lost somebody incredibly close to them. And then they leave and she's supposed to just like skip home. Like, she's just putting so much heaviness on herself every day for science, just to be able to learn more about the brain, which is something we don't even know that much about. So I don't know. I think the main thing I've gotten out of the podcast is meeting people who are dedicating their life personally or professionally to making death an easier thing to deal with, making death a little less scary. And whether that's the fear of grief and the fear of being concerned about, am I going to feel this bad all the time forever? Or, you know, finding different ways to grieve or finding ways to heal and whatever it is. The one thing I remember from that episode, two things. One thing, she did recommend drinking alcohol for breakfast the day after someone dies. She said that was okay. Her professional opinion was it's okay to have an alcoholic beverage for breakfast the day after you lose someone. So I told her that I will be doing that in all future endeavors in my life. And if anyone asks why, I will blame it on her. But also, she compared losing someone to losing a limb, which I just thought was so interesting in the sense of like how the brain works. And, you know, some people, I think, grieve harder than others. And it's harder. Some people take a loss harder than others. And everybody's different. But the brain is just this weird, complex, terrifying, strong thing that we're all stuck with. And what she said basically was, when people lose a limb, eventually they start to feel that limb again. You know, if they lose half their arm, you know, maybe a year from now, they start to feel like they have a full arm again. And that's their brain solving this problem. The problem being they lost half their arm. The brain can't grow your arm back, but it'll just trick you into thinking it's there. With death, it's the same thing, but it can't do that. You lose somebody, they're gone forever. The brain is trying to solve that problem now, which is grief, but there's nothing it could do. It can't bring that person back. So grief is forever because the brain is constantly trying to solve a problem it cannot solve. So I don't know. I just, that gave me comfort in like being sad or maybe being hard on myself for being sad for too long or in certain situations or, you know, reacting a certain way because of a thing that happened and, oh, I'm having a bad day. It's, you know, the anniversary of a friend I lost or whatever it is. So stuff like that really sticks with me. And really, it just, the main thing about the podcast is just like, it just reminds me of how important like community is and how important it is to connect with other people and have genuine conversations for more than like 5 minutes. You know, it's so nice to talk to somebody for an hour. It's so nice to not look at your phone for an hour and just like talk to another person. And, you know, if that's the only way I'm going to really get it, then I'll do the podcast forever just so that I could talk to people, you know?
I know between like Rachel and I, and along with so many other of the friends that we've made in this space and other friends who are grieving, I think we all feel the same of like, I can talk about the things that I felt I couldn't talk about with people who are not grieving or people who haven't lost somebody. Rachel and I are in the same support group. And it's funny that one person will bring up like a thought that crosses their mind that they think no one else will understand or that people will think they're weird. And then everybody else in the group is like, no, I've had this same thought. I have felt the same way. I have felt guilty about feeling happy after the loss of somebody. And everyone's like, yeah, me too. I felt that. Like, I feel really bad when I feel happy. And it's weird that you can have these like connections with people, that we all have these like weird thoughts that cross our mind about death and loss. And then we're like, oh, you have it too? Oh, I'm not as like weird as I thought I was. I think that like leads really well into another question that Rachel and I were wondering about, was how can our listeners feel more comfortable about having conversations around death, or finding ways to maybe make it less taboo in their lives? Because I think right now, whenever you bring up like a personal loss, they treat you like a fragile little egg. Like, they're scared to bring up a loss about or someone you're grieving about. And they're like, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but they don't know that this helps.
Yeah. Yeah. I think making a joke helps, right? Mm. Like, if they could see that you like, you could laugh about it a little bit, I think that helps a little. I at least for me, with like the friends that I've lost in the past couple of years, I'm really lucky in the sense that whenever I do bring it up, it's usually with other people who also knew them. Mm-hmm. And so they're also sort of grieving and like they get it. I think it's harder with a parent probably because they're not your parents, you know? So it's like, it's harder to navigate that stuff. But I think making a joke might loosen them up a little bit or realize that it's not so serious. Like, you can just have a conversation about it, or you're just like, this thing just reminded me of them. It's tough. It really is so hard to navigate that stuff. And it's why I think, you know, these groups that you go to and that other people go to, there's so much value in that because you do get that space. I think it helps as you get older too, right? Because the older you get, the more everybody around you has probably also lost somebody at that point. You know, when you're younger, it's probably harder to talk to your friends about grief, because they most likely haven't really experienced it. And, you know, you can't really fault them for that. They've never been through this thing that you're going through, and it's hard. I don't know. For me, whenever I have like a friend, whether it's about death or not, if they're going through something and they want to talk about a thing, I usually always go to them and just say one of two things. Whether, do you want me to listen, or do you want me to help you solve the problem? Hmm. Which one is it? Because I'll just listen. I'll sit here and I'll listen, and you could talk. And if I have to respond, I'll respond. But if you just want to talk, I'll just listen. But if you want to talk and also try and fix whatever is going on, whether you feel like you're stuck and, you know, the grief is too hard and, you know, you're, you know, isolating too much or whatever it is, then we could solve that problem. So I think that might help too. If you see a friend who's like struggling to talk about something, maybe give them some options and break it down a little bit, and let them know that you're willing to do whatever version of this conversation it is that they want, you know? So I don't know. I think that helps.
That's very true. I think losing somebody is a very humbling experience, because you can be like a very strong person, a very independent person, a very like proactive person, and then you lose someone that's important, and then your whole life is off kilter. And then everything that you're working towards, like, it doesn't matter anymore. And like trying to find direction again or purpose is really hard. I was definitely someone that was like a planner for everything. And then it's like, everyone died. And you're like, okay, well, how I thought my life was going to turn out is completely different. Like, I thought I'd be married with kids right now, and I have a dog, and I'm single with a dog, and I am happy with that life. But it's also like not at all what I was picturing how my life was going to be. Definitely not without my parents or my sister around. And it's something that like, it is really hard to try to figure out like how to stand on my own two feet and how to figure out like what makes sense when like everything I had thought of and imagined and planned is just completely destroyed. And like, that I think is like the really hard part. And it's like, when people don't talk about it, it's a really weird thing, because it's like my whole life changed. Everything's changed. All that, like, I miss them all the time, especially during December, but all the time. Like, that feeling's always present of like they're not here for everyday things. It's like I want to call my sister to just like complain, and I can't do that. And so it's weird when people act like they can't bring it up. It's like it's always on my brain. It's always in there. So like you not talking about it is a weird thing because we talk about your sisters or we talk about your parents, but we don't ever talk about mine or that experience anymore just because they're gone. And that's why I thought like, oh, this would be a cool conversation because people just need to be more comfortable about bringing it up. And even if it's like a swing and a miss, like the way that you brought it up is not correct or like isn't received well, like just try again. Just keep trying to bring it up. Maybe not, it won't be like perfect, but there's no like really a perfect way to do it. But like you said, allowing space for that I think is so important because people act like it's this weird thing and it's like it's just what happened to me. Like I didn't ask for it. I don't want it. If I could turn a switch and switch my situation, I would do that. Like that 100%. So I think it's a weird thing and I think people need to just be comfortable to just be like, how are you doing with it? Or like, oh, I know you did this with your sister. Like she still exists in my head. I still dream about her. You know, I talk to her sometimes. I write her letters, like all that stuff. We're hoping like if we talk about it more, hopefully it makes people feel like, okay, I can bring it up or I can make it a big deal that no one in my life brings it up because I think that's pretty shitty.
Yeah, it's so tough. Like, I mean, one of my friends that I lost, I'm also very close with her brother. He's a very good friend of mine. He's also somebody I've known for 20 plus years. So she died on November 26th. So like there was an anniversary recently, right? And I still struggled with like, how do I, like all I do is just send him a text, right? And I just go, hey buddy, I'm thinking about you today. If you need to talk, call me, you know, whatever you need, like I'm thinking about you. And that's usually the text that I'm assuming I'm going to send him for the rest of his life and for mine too, right? It's just like, hey, I know today sucks. Here's a quick reminder that I'm thinking about you and that I'm here for you. And I think that that's really enough, right? Is like, if he wants more, I'm giving him the opening to call me or tell me, you know, hey, let's go get lunch or whatever. You know, I think that you don't have to be like this superhero of a friend and show up at their house on like death anniversaries or whatever. It's more of just letting people, at least for me, just knowing that people are thinking about me and that if I do need them, that they're making themselves available. That's really all I need. And I think that's what a lot of people need. And it'll keep getting easier. Just acknowledging stuff is just as powerful and helpful as sitting there and listening to them for an hour, you know?
I found that like after my dad's passing and I tried to separate my life into my grief life and then my friend life and then my work life, I was definitely fractured in all these little portions. And I don't think ever in the past few years after my dad's passing that I felt aligned. And I didn't realize how unaligned I was until this year when I started being more confident in this like grief space and talking about it with Rachel and exploring these feelings and exploring all these different topics. Rachel and I didn't even know existed, you know, a year ago. And then Rachel and I have been sharing and talking and meeting new people. And I feel the most aligned I've ever been, I think, because I've leaned into that grief side of me and embraced it. And I was like, this feels whole because in some sense, I'm not hiding the love that I had for my dad in the corner and trying not to express emotion around that. I'm now like, I don't want to say like living that proudly because that sounds so weird, but like that grief has changed me and I'm embracing that change that has happened and hoping that like something good comes of it. Yeah. I mean, good things have already come from it considering it really sucks. Like these are bad situations, but I think that's what Rachel and I try to do is like, this sucks. You're like bad things happen to you that you don't ask for, but you still deserve like a beautiful life and you deserve happy moments. And how do you bring all that back? And while still acknowledging like, yeah, your grief sucks and it's going to hurt forever. And, trying to align with that grief again.
I just wanted to mention something from what you just said, Kendall, which I thought was really interesting, is you talked about confidence, right? And it's like, it's so interesting to equate confidence to like talking about your grief, right? Like you shouldn't have to like build up your confidence to just like talk about a person that you lost in your life. But that's sort of like where we are, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, where you feel like you need to like pump yourself up and like give yourself a speech in the mirror before you go out there and talk to somebody or mention, you know, your dad or, you know, whoever it is. And I think that all sort of goes back to this theme of like why we should be talking about death more and why it shouldn't be so uncomfortable to talk about, because there's people who are like struggling to even be confident enough to bring it up to their friends. And that's crazy. You should be more than confident enough or comfortable enough to talk about your dad and how you miss him or whatever it is. So I think conversations like this are important for people that are listening that are, you know, in on the other side of that conversation, that are there for their friends who are grieving, where it's like, yes, some people really have to like force themselves to talk about it. And I want to live in a world where you don't feel uncomfortable talking about, you know, somebody that was one of the biggest parts of your life is gone now, you know?
I think part of it is also the fear of people not responding in a way that is kind or helpful. And I've learned, you know, you don't really know me unless you know all of my grief and my loss, because that's such a huge part of me. But it's weird when, like, you're meeting new people now. It's like before people would know, like, okay, they knew people that previously like knew me growing up. They're like, oh, they know that my parents are passed away and my sister, and they like might have met my sister or know her pretty well. But then it's like you meet new people and they don't know them or they don't know that they exist. So when you kind of broach that topic, which I feel like comes up super easily because people are like, oh, where do your parents live? How many siblings do you have? And you're like, oh, well, they're dead. And it gets kind of dark really quickly. But it is this weird thing where it's like you don't know how people are going to also respond to that. Or like if you say even just like, I'm really sad right now, or I'm feeling really down about like missing my sister. It's like I think it's hard when you have friends that like don't always react like in a way that feels helpful, or either that or makes you feel like you should do like make yourself smaller, like make the grief smaller and not affect other things. So I think it's hard, but I hope like by having these conversations, people that respond that way, and maybe that's just like how they are, you know, people get awkward conversations. Sometimes you just like say the wrong thing, right? Not even if it's what you mean to say, that like people realize like, don't say that thing. Stop and think about what you're going to say to somebody, because when someone's down or feeling really low, someone telling them like, oh, that's not a big deal, or like, why are you still sad about it? Like, don't say those things.
Yeah.
Out of all things, don't say that.
There are definitely a list of things. And I've seen some clips, I think, from your show where you're like, these are things you shouldn't say. Right. And I think that that's super important, but I do sort of feel like my friends don't necessarily need to be helpful. I don't know if I need them to help me feel better or if I need them to help solve whatever I'm going through that day, because I don't think you should put that on them to be like, you need to fix whatever I'm going through right now or how I'm feeling. I don't want anybody to feel like they have to fix me in any moment. I feel like that puts too much pressure on somebody when they're already probably just feeling uncomfortable or pressure from this serious conversation. So I would say to my friends, like, I don't need your help. I just need you to listen. I think that's way more valuable than getting any sort of help from you, mostly because I don't think that they can necessarily help me or fix anything. There's way more value in just listening and letting me vent than trying to come up with a solution to a problem that they're not going to be able to fix.
Well, there's definitely no like solution or fixing that. Which I do think happens a lot where people do try to come into the conversation being like, oh, how do I fix this? And it's like, that's not going to help. But I do think the things that are like helpful, because you're not, one, no one's going to make your grief better but yourself. That's for sure. But I think what makes it feel like you're more supported is like your friends can help in different ways of just like, maybe it's listening. Maybe it's spending time with you. Maybe it's like going to the movies with you. Like it can be different things. And I think you can be helpful to like them through the process, but also know that like you're not going to be the person to fix it. And I don't think anyone can depend on your friends to fix your grief or like anything like that. I think that's a lot of unfair pressure. But what I meant by like helpful is like, if you're saying you're sad and someone's like, why are you still sad? Like that is not helpful. Don't say those type of things. But I think as a friend, like, you 100% should be able to provide some type of something, whether it's like, we can just talk about it we can spend time together, like any of that stuff. I feel like as a friend, if it's like a good friend, like that should be stuff that like you can do, because that doesn't cost anything. That's just like you being a human, caring about another human. But yeah, I definitely don't think you should ever expect anyone to fix your grief. One, you can't fix it, but also like you need to figure out by yourself or with therapy or whatever you need, how's the best way that I can handle this and like this sadness and whatever you're going through. But yeah, I mean, no one's going to fix that for you. But I think as friends, like you can be helpful in different ways, but not in the like, I'm going to do this for you, because that part is, sure. Yeah, you can't do that.
I got you. Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, you know, like you said, going to a movie or getting lunch, that is helpful. And that does help for sure. I guess it's just like I'm looking at it on like a fixing the problem sort of help. And yeah, that doesn't exist. But I got you. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. There are ways to help like that.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel. I think that was like our number one tip when we were like, if you know someone who's grieving, here are things that will help in this like deep mourning time, was just like they just need a space to express the thousands of emotions they're feeling right now. Because when you lose somebody, there's a lot of things you're feeling for the first time. Like, I don't think it matters if you're young or if you're old, you lose somebody and all of a sudden you're like, I didn't know I could feel this immense pain or this amount of anger or this amount of confusion. And just like having like, I think like, I don't want to say a safe space in like a cushy type of way, but like a comfortable space where these people who are grieving can just express that emotion and be like, I don't even know how to even process this. I don't even know where to begin. I don't even know like what I'm going to do because this person I love is now gone. Like it just, I think that was like the number one thing. Rachel and I were both like, man, it would have been nice. And I do, I have shout out to my friends. They did do that and they didn't know how to help me. I admitted like, I didn't even know how to help me because I had never gone through this before. I had no clue what those emotions were going to be or how to grieve or how to communicate to other people that I was like in this deep depression now, and how to have other people like get me out of that or to be there for me. We were all like learning together at the same time. And there was a lot of like ups and downs, but I'm very thankful for them for just even like letting me cry in front of them. Because before I never did that.
Yeah. Yeah. Crying helps.
Yeah.
We're pro crying around here.
Yeah. We cried most episodes, and
yeah, I feel like I don't. What did I do wrong? No one's cried this episode.
We still have a little bit of time. One more question. We'll see if this one triggers the tears. Right. So you mentioned it kind of started with the fear of dying and death, but after all these episodes, after talking about death for 5 years, after going through therapy, are you still afraid of death?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm terrified. I mean, it's so scary. I don't want to die. I want to live forever. If somebody told me that they have the magic pill or whatever it is, I would do it for sure in an instant. I don't think I'll ever not be scared of dying. I think maybe I'll become more comfortable with the idea, but it's always going to be terrifying. And just because it's terrifying doesn't stop it from also being exciting and interesting and something that I, you know, genuinely enjoy talking about and discussing with people and, you know, share being vulnerable. I think those are the best topics. I want to, you know, overshare with strangers forever and let people know that I'm scared. And, you know, I think that that's great, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think I'll ever not be scared of dying. Anybody who like has had a near-death experience, you know, I do spend way too much time reading like near-death experiences on like Reddit and stuff. And most people are like, it was the most calming, relaxing. It was euphoric. I've never felt better in my life. There are people that were like, I was in a deep depression after my near-death experience because I had never felt that good before. And like, I've never felt that good since. And that gives me a little bit of hope that maybe it's not as scary. And I think your brain probably does do a little bit of protecting when like you are dying, you know, whatever chemicals are getting mixed up in your brain while your life is ending, probably make it a little bit easier. But I mean, there's like so many different aspects to this idea of being scared of death, right? Like, I'm scared of death in the sense of like getting hit by a car and like rolling into a ditch and just like slowly dying alone in like a patch of grass.
It's very specific.
It's top five for sure. I don't know why. I've never come close to getting hit by a car, but for, there's so many different aspects of the fear. You know, yeah. It's like, oh, you're scared of spiders. So it's like, okay, well, you're just scared of spiders. It's like, there's not much more to it than that. I'm scared of death in the sense of like, I don't want to suffer. I don't want to spend a month in the hospital, like slowly dying. I don't want to get to be 90 years old and die alone in a hospital room with like some nurse who's like checking their TikTok while I'm like taking my last breath and everyone I love has died already. I mean, there's no way I make it till 90, and I probably will be the first person that dies out of like all of my friends, just because, you know, that stress is the silent killer and it'll probably get me first.
Is that the truth?
But I try and combat that with like other things, like, oh, I'm gonna plan a really fun funeral. I mean, I have my funeral planned to the type of weather that needs to be happening. Like, you can't hold my funeral unless there are clouds and a light drizzle. If that is not happening, I do not go into the ground unless there is rain. Like, I have gotten so deep into it. And look, my therapist doesn't necessarily think that that's the greatest way of coping with these fears, but I don't care and she can't stop me. But
yes, and a huge proponent to do your will, plan your funeral. Do not leave that to your beneficiaries or the people who have to handle that after you. That's stressful. Because like, I had to do that for my dad. He had nothing planned. I was like, oh dear Lord, like,
yeah, who wants their dad to die and then you got to do paperwork on top of it? What a fucking nightmare.
So much paperwork.
Like, is this how we would have wanted? Like, I don't know. We're just doing our best to make it happen. And there is something to be said, I think, about having the weather be the way you want it. Because I told Rachel, I was like, the day we buried my dad, it was a beautiful day, a beautiful October day. Yeah. And I was pissed. I was pissed that the sun was out. I was pissed the birds weren't singing. I was like, it should be storming right now. Yeah. Like, the world should just be as sad as me. And like, looking back in retrospect, I was like, you know, my dad was like such a beautiful person. And so I am glad he was like, you know, put to rest on a beautiful day, because that is totally aligned with who he is. But at the time, I'm bawling in front of all these people, like 100 people, and I'm like streaming tears and snot. I was like, it should be raining right now.
And
like,
yeah, birds 100% are chirping. There's a rainbow behind you. It's not the ideal funerals. And I totally get that. And it's part of, I think, why I say that, because I'm like, I want to create a very specific ambiance to my funeral. And I want everyone needs to be crying. There needs to be lots of emotion. And if the sun is out, it may be a little bit more difficult for them to dig deep and pull those emotions out that I need. So I think a cloudy, rainy day is perfect. I could do a whole podcast just about, you know, funeral details. I mean, I think about it a lot.
The second most important day of your life, like, other than being born.
I thought you were going to say your wedding. I thought you were going to go, it's wedding and then funeral.
It's like wedding. Like,
that's somewhere in there. But like, you coming into this world and you leaving this world are pretty.
It's your last party.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't done it in a while. I used to ask people like the type of music they would want to hear at their funeral. Like, I mean, I got a full Spotify playlist that I've been building for years. Yeah,
I have a playlist as well with just like funeral? Songs I want at my funeral.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly adding to that. Oh, it's you. Well, you know, you live your life, but I will say what you were saying, Kendall, is like, yeah, you want to make sure all that's planned so that when you do die, all the other people that are in your life don't have to think about that stuff. They just they're able to just hand it off to somebody, and that person, the funeral director, whoever it is, will take care of it, and that's the end of it.
If I could pre-plan it as much as possible on me, like, I'm going to do that, because knowing what it's like to have to, is this the casket he would have wanted? Like, does he want to be buried? Like, we think about it all the time. He never really clarified to any of us if he actually wanted to be buried. And I was like, did he want to be cremated? I don't know. Like, these were not things we asked and we did not have on paper somewhere. So if I could reduce that, like, decision fatigue for whoever has to deal with that. For me, I'd be like, hey, you just have to follow a checklist. Like, I did all the hard work for you. Now, just make it happen.
I want to be turned into dive-ins or into a tree pod.
We love the tree pod over here.
Yeah, that's great. My dad's a woodworker, and he made his own urn and was like, this is what I want you to put me in. And it was as simple as that. He's like, I want to be cremated, and you could put me in this. I made it myself, and
That's really beautiful.
Yeah, it was amazing. And, like, you know, I think as he gets older, he's obviously more comfortable with, like, discussing that stuff. It's as simple as that, being like, oh, yeah, just so you know, I want to get cremated, right? Like, that's it. It's not this difficult conversation. You could just tell them. But obviously, the more specific you get, the easier it is.
Mm-hmm. That just reminds me of, like, when older people start talking about death. And people are always like, don't say that. Like, don't say that. You're not dying anytime soon. It's like, it's not necessarily that you're dying anytime soon. It's just that you're trying to figure a few things out and, like, talk about it so people know what you want. And people are like, no, it means you're going to die. Like, it doesn't mean you're going to die. It just means, I mean, you will die, but it doesn't mean you're going to die. That doesn't mean that you're going to die because of that conversation. It just makes it a lot more clear, because then you pass away and everyone's like, well, what did you want? Like, for Rob, it's plug and play. The earth has to cry or he's not going down.
No, it needs to be raining. I mean, dark, cloudy skies. It's got to be outside. You know, I got the playlist. I'm going to have a budget. There's going to be money in a bank account for, you know, food and drink and all. I'm going to take care of everything. It's your last chance to throw a party. I mean, what are you doing?
And it's all about you. And it's, no one can take it away.
Yeah, of course.
You should just have the background at the party. Just play your podcast every episode. Just in the
background. You think I haven't thought about pre-recording a podcast for after I die? Because I have.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant.
Is it already recorded?
Well, no. So this is the idea. God forbid I get, like, a diagnosis in, like, 5 years from now and they're like, you got six Knock months left wood. To live. The idea would be, if I'm told I have 6 months, a year, whatever it is, once we get to a certain point, what I would do is I would record an episode and then just schedule it to be released at a certain point. And if I needed to let one other person be involved in this whole plan and give them the proper account and password, and they could schedule it accordingly. But yeah, for sure. Definitely want to have been dead for a certain amount of time and then have everyone get back the alert on their phone that says there's a new podcast episode out. And, like, I've been dead for, like, 6 weeks or whatever.
I feel like we just got an exclusive.
I'm telling you, the amount of thought that I put into this shit is ridiculous.
It's a lot.
But
it's a lot.
But I think it helps. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's silly to be like, oh, yeah, I can't wait for that podcast episode to drop after I've been dead for 6 weeks. But it's like, well, what the fuck else, man? Like, I'm dead. It's over. It's going to happen. I'm just trying to have a little fun, you know?
Yeah, I used to be more afraid of, like, other people dying more than, like, thinking about my own death. But, like, since it happened, it's like, okay, that felt really bad. And it already happened, so I don't have fear of that. I think if anything, death seems like, oh, well, I'll be reunited with my sister and my mom and my dad. So to me, it's like a reunion. It doesn't feel scary. I think the only thing is, like, I mean, I still want to live. I don't want, you know, I feel like I have a lot of things I want to accomplish. Me and Kendall have a lot of things we want to accomplish. And I think, and, like, the main thing, I was like, I can't explain to my dog what happened. And he's obsessed with me and I'm obsessed with him. I could have a podcast obsessed with JMO. Like, that could be a podcast in itself. And I couldn't explain to him where I went. And to me, like, that just breaks my heart, because you can't tell him anything. You know, he just wants to be with me all the time. But otherwise, it's almost like at some point, whenever my time comes, I'll be reunited with my family. So to me, it's a lot more of a calming thought, where I used to have fears of just like, oh my God, if my mom didn't pick up my phone call, what happened to her? And I would sometimes call her like 20 times. And then, like, now that she's gone, it's like, well, that hurt worse than I even imagined it could have hurt. But since I've dealt with that, now it's like, oh, okay, we'll be reunited at some point. So now my only fear is, like, Jameson won't know where I am.
Well, animals are also invited to my funeral. Anyone is more than welcome to bring their pet to the funeral. If, you know, I think it's important to bring animals to funerals. You know, if an owner of a dog dies, I think that bringing that animal to the funeral is important. They should get to grieve like anybody else. I mean, dogs are incredibly intelligent. They know that person's not alive anymore. That, you know, it's better than them just like sitting at the door waiting for them to like show up again forever. But yeah. Everyone's invited, animals and humans, to my funeral.
Jameson, you hear that?
Jameson, you're invited, pal.
You got the invite. Yeah. We got on record. He's got the invite.
Well, Rob, is there anything else that you would like to sum in? And like, where can our listeners find you? Is there anything coming up that you would like to share with them? How can they learn more about you? Give us your whole spiel. We want to plug you well.
Thank you. Well, the podcast is called Obsessed with Death. It's on all the podcasting stuff. So you can just Google Obsessed with Death and it should come up. There's not a lot of other things on the internet with that title. So it's pretty easy. And, you know, that's really all I got going on. You know, just follow the podcast. Maybe try and talk to somebody about death. Try and talk to your mom or your dad, friend. Maybe a stranger at the grocery store. Just walk up to them and ask them, you know, when they think they're going to die. I'm sure it'll go really well.
We're in full circle of having these conversations, and now Rob's going to end up back in the parking lot with his white van.
Yeah. Just go up to strangers and ask them how they want to die. No. So yeah, it's just the podcast. It's called Obsessed with Death. Please check it out. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on. This is really fun.
Yeah, this was. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Of course.
Yeah, our first crossover episode has come in.